It's an industry that I generally love. I have a passion for. I eat, sleep, I live for fitness.
No, you need to be obsessed. You need to wake up, think about it. You need to go to bed, think about your clients, think about your progress, think about what you can do better.
Genuinely, like, just be like patient and take your time. Like that is like, you've got to take it all in the right steps. You've got to nail what you do in person before you go online.
I don't like to talk about fear. The fears is usually something that makes your worries real.
Welcome to the Coaching Ignited podcast. My name is Alex Povey. If you're a new listener, the show is released every Sunday on all the major platforms, including Spotify and iTunes. So be sure to hit that subscribe button so you don't miss a show. Every week, we invite a new guest from the fitness industry or coaching space to share their personal journey in business. We will deep dive into actionable ideas, strategies, and systems that you can apply in your life and business too. You can also access free weekly content in our private Facebook group by searching Coaching Ignited. And if you're a face-to-face personal trainer with room to take on additional clients, head over to coachingignited.com where you can apply for our 30-day client accelerator program and find out more about our business, sales, and marketing training platform. Now let's get into this week's episode. Enjoy the show. Hey, welcome back to another episode of the podcast. It's great to have you here. We've had some amazing feedback on the recent shows with Tim Megginson on boot camps and Hannah Chan on high ticket coaching and sales. So if you haven't listened to those already, go check those out. But today we've got Tim Drummond on the show. Tim is a real expert when it comes to coaching psychology, selling high ticket sales, and really just getting amazing results for his clients. So on today's episode, we're going to dive into all those topics, and he's also got some crazy stories to share with us. So let's get into this week's episode. All right, so take two. Let's go again. little bit of a tech issue, but we're rolling now. Want to welcome you to the podcast, Tim. Great to have you here. Looking forward to getting into your story and everything you've been doing over the last few years. So let's just rewind it a little bit. So for anyone that doesn't know who you are and what you do, who is Tim Drummond?
So I've been in the industry for about 10 years now, just over 10 years. And I think it's always interesting looking at why people got into the industry. To be honest, like I used to work in the city. I was a futures trader. I went straight there from university. A pretty fucking, sorry, can I swear? He's done an F-bomb already. That's bad. A pretty good opportunity, to be honest. It's like a dream job. And I went and did it for 2 years. And just looking back now, I didn't have the discipline. I didn't do what was needed. I certainly didn't do what the guys who were making 200-400 grand a year at like 23, 24 were doing. And I basically stopped doing that and I was a bit lost. And I just decided to become a personal trainer. To be honest, it was going to be that or be a teacher. I didn't really know. I just always liked fitness. I liked reading about training. I liked reading, especially nutrition. So I just went and did Premier. And it wasn't like I had big aspirations. It wasn't like I'm going to go and shed loads of money or anything like that. It's just like I need something to do. And I was a bit burnt out and kind of, I suppose, down from it not working with what I was doing. I just wanted to do something that I enjoyed. I was doing part-time jobs for a little bit. Like I couldn't, it was weird because like I went to get a normal job because trading isn't a normal job. People just didn't get it. They were just like, it was almost like I was overqualified. I was like, I just want to do something. I was applying for jobs that were like more entry level and then you build up. It just weren't happening. And so I basically worked my ass off for a month or so, because it was quite expensive. And I wanted to do it properly. It was like 3 months full time. And yeah, I really enjoyed it. I really liked doing it. I remember like, it seemed like lots of the other people that I was doing the class just didn't seem to be that bothered. And I think maybe it was just because I was a bit older and I'd just been burnt. And I think the other reason is because I actually just really enjoyed what I was doing. I liked the learning. So that was 3 months. And then I came straight out from there and got myself a job straight away in Fitness First in Shepherd's Bush. And I was quite good at it straight away. So I was quite good at the sales. I didn't know what I was doing. I just talked a lot. And yeah, within a year or so, I was really enjoying it.
Do you think, like, looking back at anything you've done before you got into the industry, in terms of the sales side of it, set you up for success? Because you said, like, you started out and you were pretty good and you were chatty. Did anything happen in your life before? Did you have previous experience before getting into it that really helped you and grow your career?
Yeah, definitely. Although I didn't know. So, and probably some of it I'd only have started to realize, like, maybe a couple of years ago. I'd split it into two. When I was a trader, the guys that were the best, they'd kind of, like, I remember the first time I made $5,000 on a trade, it was like 10 seconds. I just sat there and I was like, my fucking God. And I got up and, like, lots of people were like, well done, well done. And there's a couple of the guys there and they're like, just watch yourself for the next couple of days. And I was like, I didn't ignore them, but I was like, I don't know what they're talking about. And the psychology of trading is exactly like the psychology of sales. Like, it's like the psychology of golf. You can't get too attached to the outcome when it goes well and too attached to the outcome when it goes badly. If you get cocky, you're going to get your ass given back to you. And so a lot of the guys that were the best at trading understood psychology, understood behaviors. I had no clue at that point. Fast forward 7 years later, and it's basically a lot of the stuff I teach around persuasion, influence, sales. So there was definitely that. But again, I didn't know that. I actually did my dissertation as well on something called efficient markets, which is the psychology of markets and, like, stock markets. And it's like, is it rational? Is it irrational? And you realize that, again, that's all about behaviors of humans. So there was a lot of stuff that I connected the dots off backwards, but I would never have known at the time. If you fast forward, if you rewind before that, I grew up with no money. I grew up like in a single parent family. My mum done 3 jobs, like, you know, used to get those little stamp things that you got free school dinners and stuff like that. And at the beginning of the year, we'd get vouchers to go and get free school uniforms and all shit like that. And I was doing shit when I was 8. I cooked, had a little flapjack business going on. I remember when I was like 11, 12, I had 3 paper hours. I was earning like 20. This is back in the day. I'm like 42, 41. So I was earning like £23 a week from doing paper rounds. This was like, most people would, you know, might get like, I don't know, a bit of pocket money still. When I was 18, we went to this, a lot of my friends were posh kids and went to posh schools, and we went to this event, and it's like, they were charging 50 quid for an event that should have cost 10 quid. And I was just like, I could do this. And so we just decided, like, we're going to go and do it. We basically hired a nightclub, put 500 people in there, charged these posh kids 50 quid, made like 10, 12 grand from one night. So I kind of always been into, I wouldn't say entrepreneurship, although I would now. I didn't know it was that at the time. I just always into making money. Like, I hustled, I would just do things to get money because I didn't have it. So I think it's always been there from when I was young. So when I sort of walked into the gym floor, I think also because I was a tiny bit older, and I found it's not hard. It's like, go and fucking talk to people. Like, I remember, like, even in the first, I think it was about 2 weeks in, there was a dude looking at the profile board, and like, no one bothered going and speaking to him. And I was like, I'm going to go and speak to him. Turns out he was a Chinese student and he just bought 3 sessions a week. And at the time, that was a lot of money. It was like 400 quid. I was just like, why aren't other people doing this? I remember when I joined Gymbox, the woman said, oh, do you want to write some stuff for the newsletter? And I was like, huh? She's like, yeah, I've been asking the trainers here for the last 6 months. No one wants to do it. I was like, so who does this go out to? She goes, oh, it goes out to everyone who's a member. And I can write what I want. Yeah. And I was like, and no one's done that. And she's like, no. And I was like, hell fucking yeah. So I wrote articles every single week and sent out to this list. I got clients. It's like, I put posters up in the gym and no one was doing it. And then everyone followed. And for me, it was just like, it's not hard. Just take some fucking action, first of all. Stop being lazy and drinking your lattes. and wondering why you're not getting business. So I think I find it fun as well. That's the thing. I think business is fun. And I think when you find it fun, it's not such a stress and not such a hassle.
So you're in the gym, you're basically seeing opportunities that other people are not seeing. You're taking advantage and you're seeing results off the back of it. Here's the probably interesting part. Why do you think no one does that? Why do you think no one is seizing these opportunities or going out there and trying to win business or being proactive and really just taking a backseat when it comes to growing a business? Why do you think that happens so much in the industry?
So I'm going to give like two levels of answers. I'll give you why they would say it is, and I think actually why it is. It's much easier to say it won't work for me. So it doesn't work for me. It doesn't work around here. My clients won't pay that. People in this gym won't pay that. I can't, or it doesn't work here, which is how I would have sometimes thought of things as well. I think that if you just replace that with like, I'm actually just scared to do it, then you're in a good place, because the reality is people are just scared. They don't want to face the level of rejection that you need to face to get progression. I remember I was at Fitness First in Liverpool Street, so that's a nice area. I was in the city. I was charging more than everyone else, and I was like, well, I want to charge £1,000 a month for four sessions a week. And it was a lot more than everyone else was charging. Now, I could sit there and go, well, it doesn't work. Everyone else is doing this, then I can't make it work. And I was like, nah, I'm just going to decide that I'm going to do it, and then I'm going to figure out how do I make that work. So at that kind of price point, to be honest, I just worked harder. So I just spoke to more people, and I sold with just talk. I just talked a lot. And I had a little way of doing it, but it worked. And then I was like, right, what can I see around me that are the people in London that are doing the best? Like, who are literally the best trainers in London, or so-called best trainers? I'm not saying they're not, by the way. It was like, who's charging the most? So I looked at, there was a company called Bodyism at the time, and I worked out like, what are they charging? And they used to charge per session, but I didn't want to charge per session. I wanted to charge monthly. So I worked it out. Like, if someone came to me at their session rate for four times a week, and I wanted to charge monthly at the point, that would work out at 2,000 a month. I was like, right, I'm going to charge £2,000 a month for my personal training. And then I was like, I need to now go and figure out how I'm going to make that happen. So it's not easy, but I was like, okay, well, first of all, I need to be in the right place. So the city is good, but the real affluence in London is in Mayfair, Belgravia. So I went and found a studio over there, and I just spent time around there. I was like, I need to be around those types of people. I remember I walked past a really posh hairdresser's there, and I was just kind of, I don't know, going to Waitrose to get some lunch or something, and just saw like Bentley and whatever else was outside, a Ferrari, and I was just like, ah, that's where I need to be. Like, there's rich people. So I just started booking my haircut in there. It cost me a bit more, but that's okay. And I just talked to people in there. And eventually they're like, what do you do? Chit chat, chit chat. And then one girl who I got on really well just turned around one day and goes, oh, by the way, I've got a client for you. Oh, and she said something like, he's rich, so you can charge him what you want. And so we sat down, had a conversation, and I sold him into 6 months at £2,000. It's like, I got up and I walked away and I looked at my online banking app and there was £12,000 sitting in my account. And I was just like, what, how the fuck did that happen? Like, what most people, and by the way, I get that it's London, so it is slightly different, I get that. But I think that what most people end up doing is like, it doesn't work, I can't make it work, as opposed to like, how can I go and make it work? Just admitting to ourselves that, you know what, I'm just actually scared of doing this. Like, I'm scared of getting rejection, because you do start getting rejection when you start being more proactive in business. When you sit in the gym and people come to you and, you know, it's like, I convert every, you probably heard this, like, oh, I'm good at sales, I convert everyone that sits in front of me. I'm like, yeah, of course you do, because they're already buying from you. That's already the decision. You just need to not fuck it up. So I think the big difference is just understand, I didn't know that way of framing it, but just to admit that I'm just a bit scared of doing this. I'm fearful, as opposed to it doesn't work. Because I think I think, unfortunately, and I don't know what it is about the fitness industry, and maybe it's other industries as well. I just think there's a massive lack of self, let's call it self-confidence, but self-worth as well. I don't know why it is. I think that the people like Premier, it's not that they do this. It's like they teach you, charge £30 an hour, and then charge a little bit more than everyone else around you, and you're doing well. And I was just like, that's bullshit. Like, I just didn't, I wanted something different. So I think it's, I think if you can get out and surround yourself with people that have a bit of a bigger mindset, that's really beneficial. For me, the guy actually that I wrote two books with and I run a business with now, we just randomly happened to be in the same gym, which I think made a massive difference. Like, we had the same mindset, we still do. So I think that really helped me as well.
I want to go back a second to what you mentioned about that money hitting your account, because that must have been game-changing for your mindset as well, if that was the first time that you sold high ticket and had that type of money coming into your account. Like, what happened in that moment when you saw that money? How did that affect your mindset going forward when it came to approaching sales?
Yeah, I mean, I'll share a story with you, and it's unreal that I actually went through this. Me and a guy that I was working with, we ran a functional medicine business, and I was the business person, he was the guy who was doing the functional medicine. And it's strange because, like, in front of my eyes, I saw this. He was also a osteopath, and we just agreed that we were going to do this business together. And he came back one day, and he was all like, I think he was pale and white. And he's basically like, I've just had a session with this dude. And he mentioned the guy's name. And at the time, I had no idea who this guy was. And he's got two more sessions with him. And on the third one, he goes, he's asked me to come to the States to work with him for 11 days. And at this time, I knew a bit about business. And by the way, this guy was when I say a multi-billionaire, I mean one of the most successful entrepreneurs in Silicon Valley. Most people would know who he is. It's not Zuckerberg, but it's, you know, it's a couple of steps back. And I was like, right, charge him 11 grand for 11 days and fucking ask for a first class flight. And he asked the guy, and the guy was like, yeah, no problem. And then he went out there and he bailed me up, and he was like, he's just asked me to do him a week, a month for the next 12 months. What the fuck do I do? I was like, ask him for 120 grand. And so he just did it. And the guy was like, yeah, that's fine. And then fast forward again, and we were in Hawaii. We'd been out there for 5 weeks. And this was on the guy, by the way. It was a 50 grand condo. And he asked him, like, I want you to move to America to work with me full time and my company. And this just sounds ridiculous, even saying it back to you. And he was like, what shall I do? And I was like, look, fuck it. Just ask him for £500,000. And he went to go and do the meeting and basically just came back in again, white as a sheet. I was like, what the fuck? And he goes, I don't know, but I just asked him for £1 million. And this guy was 23, by the way. I was like, and he goes, well, he turned around and said, I was thinking half that. And he's like, deal. So I literally saw this happen in front of my eyes, where someone who's my business partner, who's 24, gets a contract with someone for £500,000. And I was just like, fucking hell. Like, if he can do that, ask him for, you know, for 12, 15 grand is just nothing. It was a no brainer. And with that business, we took two clients on, one at 50 grand and one at 45 for the year. So kind of just doing it and asking it, and it does change your mindset, because now you've got frames of reference that people will pay it. Now, again, I'm not saying everyone will. And of course, you need to find the people that have that sort of money. But when you do that, and when you basically you're willing to go and ask for what you want, it changes things. Like, I walked from that guy paying me 12 grand, and I didn't have an issue asking him for the money, as in I knew I was worth it. And it was quite easy, to be honest. It was much easier than when I was selling personal training in the gym for 50 quid. Like, I'd learned a little bit about sales. I'd paid for some sales training. You know, it was a bit clunky, I suspect, but, you know, he didn't batter an eyelid. Is he? I mean, yeah. So it definitely, I mean, it massively changes things.
Mm. That's a crazy story.
Tell me about it. The thing was, it's almost because this guy who was my business partner just trusted me so much, and he was quite young. I don't know if I would have had the balls to do what he did. I don't know. But he just trusted me and my certainty. So he just did what I said. And then, yeah. And it was like, God, can you imagine that at that age? So I think when you, even if you took that out of the equation, like my last one-to-one transformation, it was $18,000 for 16 weeks. And again, he didn't batter an eyelid. He just went, yeah. Just go and ask for stuff. And eventually people will say yes. I asked that guy for $100,000 to work with him for a year. And he did say no. But in my mind, I was like, right, I just need to ask three more people the same question. And one of them will say yes. But I think that's kind of, you know, and again, even if you're in a town where it's not like those kind of people, if you learn to sell, which you do need to, it is a skill set that most personal trainers don't have. And they don't understand the importance of it, and they think that they're good at it, and they're not. And it's not like it's icky. It's just most of the time when you're selling higher value stuff, it's because the client has to fully commit to doing it. So any client can just throw 30 quid at it, and if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. They don't have to feel that I've actually stepped up and taken proper action. You know, it's like, it's 30. When you ask for a lot of money, it's the other person having to face their internal fears that they can't make it work. It's most of the time not about whether your stuff works. They might say that, or they might say it's too expensive, but most of the time it's not that. It's that they internally don't believe that they can make it work. And it's like, because I used to get told this a lot from people, it's like, if it doesn't work with you, I've got no idea what I'm going to do. And I started hearing that a lot because I was charging so much more than everyone else. And other things they'd say to me was like, you know, I've tried everything else. Okay. So they're sitting there, and it was the online stuff a lot of the time. It's like they're sitting there and they're just about to, they're thinking of spending a lot of money, and they have to really commit to doing it. Like they have to put their money where their mouth is, and that's hard for people to do.
Mm. Did you feel the pressure then when you were charging these high ticket prices where you're asking for thousands and thousands of pounds? How did it feel to you? Because you mentioned there, like, you need to have the belief that you can get the results. And if you don't have the belief that you can get the results, then you're not going to ask for those high ticket prices. So what was it like as someone taking on those contracts or those training programs at those high ticket prices? What did it feel like to you going through that process as the trainer?
Yeah, it's a good question, actually. I think there was levels of it. I remember I spoke to Dax Moy a while ago. So he when I came through the fitness industry at the beginning, he was really well known in London and had a studio, and he does a lot of coaching now. And I just really respected him always. And I had a conversation with him, and he was like, one thing that you have to understand about coaching is that you can't do it for them. And you have to accept that some people are not going to get a result with your stuff, however much money they've paid. And I knew that before that. I knew it rationally, but it just made a difference when I heard it from someone who I really respected and had been there and done it. And so you can't help everyone. Like, people bark like an Alsatian, and then they get into your program and they act like a poodle. Now, that doesn't mean it's not our responsibility to be the best coaches we can be. So I found it, sometimes I did find it difficult. I had times where I was charging like $3,000 for 12 weeks online. And I had times where clients just literally disappeared. Didn't see, like week three, they left. And I never heard from them. And I chased them up and I chased them up. Now, it doesn't feel great. But when you frame it, when you realize that, you know, you can't do it for them, that for me makes a big difference. When I was charging that sort of money for personal training, with the guy, the first big ticket, I had no concern whatsoever. I knew that I was going to deliver on the value that I had charged him. I think when you start going online, and I did a post about this before, the thing with high ticket online is that it's very naked. It is results driven. So you can sell personal training and someone could be in your personal training for 5 years and basically look the same as they did 5 years ago. Maybe they've lost a little bit of weight. And that's kind of okay because they've got other benefits from it. They get out the office, they feel better, they feel a bit fitter and stronger. To be honest, a lot of it is also just your company in the gym and just like stress relief and all this kind of stuff. So you're selling something, you know, even the whole rent-a-friend, which I didn't like, but in a way, sometimes that's just what some people need. And with High Ticket Online, you don't get any of that. It's literally about the result. So that's why some people struggle online, because there's almost like, I think there's almost like a tacit agreement I used to have with my personal training clients that we both kind of wanted to get results, but we both buried our heads a bit and we'd say, right, we're motivated to do some results over this next 2 months. And then they would drift off and all that kind of stuff. But when you go online, it's a very different game, which that's why I think I've actually got a client at the moment who was selling online at £1,500. So I don't know, what's that, about $2,000. And he sold 2 or 3 people into the program. So he made money, but they disappeared. He didn't know how to remedy the situation. And he just decided he stopped doing it because he didn't feel good. So I think there is a distinction between online and in person, especially high ticket, proper coaching online. But I never got to a stage where I was personal training where I had any doubt in the money that I charged. It happened a little bit more when I was online doing coaching.
I just wanted to dive into something you mentioned there about people signing up with you and then like ghosting you, going like off the radar, or like you just can't get them the results and you're doing everything in your power to get them the results. And there might be a lot of coaches that are going through this situation right now where they really want to help people. They really want to help these people get results and they're doing everything that they can, but the clients are not responding. How do you deal with those situations? And you mentioned one of your clients as well where that happened and it's probably crushed him to a degree. How do you deal with those situations of people who pay you a large amount of money, but then don't follow through and commit to the training or programs that you provide them with?
Yeah, you're right. It did actually. He stopped doing it totally. Even though he probably could have carried on selling at that price. He just, his whether you call it integrity, authenticity, wouldn't allow him to do it. And I think that you've got to be pretty damn sociopathic to keep selling stuff and like feel that you're not delivering. So I know you teach sales. One of the reasons why every single person that's listening to this needs to understand sales is because sales is about client selection as well. So I would already, it's like a whole series of persuasion from the first time they ever read your stuff to the end of your program. I am at all points framing the clients that I want to work. I don't necessarily believe that ideal clients are ideal clients. I actually think you make ideal clients. I don't think, because everyone wants the leads on tap of ideal clients. It's like, no, that's your job to make them ideal. And you'd start by doing that in your sales calls. So I would do a lot of things where I push the person away. I qualify the fuck out of them. To be able to do that, you need to understand how you have that person come towards you. So there's an energy on a sales call. It's like, who's pursuing who? What most people will do as fit pros and what most people do when they first start selling is that I'm trying to sell to you. My job on the sales call is to flip that. It's like, I'm going to flip the energy here. So you're going to prove yourself to me on this call and I'm going to make you do it. And you have to understand how to do that. There's a structure. But when I close someone, you can't just do a normal sales call or sales conversation like a lot of people do when they have no clue how to do it. And then at the end go, why me? Why do you want to work with me? And then they say it and you're like, no, come on, why me? You go down the road and it's a quarter of the price. Come on, tell me. It's like, what type of client would you be for me? And I'm asking these questions because I mean it. And I'm like, what type of client would you be? What's going to happen if in week 3 you've not lost any weight? How are you going to react? Like, there's no refunds in this program. What's your thoughts? And all of these questions pushed people away. So if someone is either at that point not 100% like committed to the program, like if you tell someone there's no refunds to this program, if they're not committed to the program, they'll go and they'll run a mile. They won't do it. So I'm pushing people away all the time in my sales conversations. So it starts from the beginning. Like I the advanced sales stuff that I do, I teach like what's like a 9-box close. So it's very structured of like, this is what we're going to do. Here's what I expect from my clients. Is that okay if I tell you? Yes. Right. You are going to work out 3 to 4 times a week. We'll figure that out. And I want you to eat 2 healthy meals a day. Are you okay with that? Yes. Are you sure? And so there's a whole structure there that I create around pushing people away. It, by the way, it creates a huge amount of desire as well, because when it's like in personal relationships, when you can't have something, you want to chase it more. When it's easy to have it, just you lose interest. So on a sales conversation, the energy should always be flipped and they need to qualify themselves to you. So questions like, what's going to happen if we get to week 3 and you've not lost weight, will reveal a lot about the person. And often they'll go, look, I get that this has taken me years to get here, so I'll be okay with that. Yeah, but what are we going to do? And so you're structuring the whole journey at that point. In the first sales call, the first coaching call, there's a structure that you need to create where you create boundaries, where you tell them like what it is that you do and what you don't. Like the whole thing around like, oh, I give them unlimited access. It's just bullshit. No, you're not getting unlimited access to me because my job is to help you, enable you to be able to do this. So in the first coaching call that I do, there's a massive structure again, which is doing the exact same thing. So you're always trying to get in front of the problems that could occur, hopefully avoiding them all. I frame it like winners and losers, and I'll say it in the first coaching call. Can I give you a bit of an idea of like the people that tend to win and the people that tend to not do so well? And they're like, yeah. So I have a little story around the people that really do well and the people that don't. I create content in my programs where, for instance, I'm a big believer in MyFitnessPal, but most people, they use MyFitnessPal and they get overwhelmed and they disappear off. So I create content where I get in front of the problems that the person who's my client would be experiencing. You design your program so it doesn't overwhelm clients. Because most of the time when clients disappear, it's because most trainers, if we go back to like the whole money thing, they equate high ticket with stuff. And I'm like, no, it's the exact opposite. You want to give them as little as possible that gets the result. So things like 2 to 3 things each week are the way that you coach clients to get results. So it's an ethos of your programs, which means that your clients ghost you and leave most of the time because they're struggling and they don't know how to tell you. So I create a training around honesty. I don't call it that, but it's like, I just want the truth on the table. Most fit pros are terrible at empathy. They've got no idea. They can't understand how their clients are like they are. So they're very judgmental without meaning to be. So they give them in week 1 some macro program. Your clients can't follow that. So this is the part where it's our responsibility as coaches to learn the behaviors and the way that the brain works of people that aren't them. Because fit pros find it easy. Normal people don't. So I think if you create your program and your sales conversation to stop that happening as much as possible. But it will still happen. So I reckon my aim is always to help to get results with 90% of my clients. I accept that 10% are just, it's just not going to happen.
Something that jumped out at me, and I just want to get clear on this, is the pre-framing at the start to try and alleviate people obviously making a commitment with no intention of getting the results, but also being careful not to push people away. Like, how do you strike a balance between that pre-framing and being like restrictive and pre-qualifying people and almost pushing them away and then making sales and running a business that generates revenue? because they're two conflicting kind of objectives, right? You want to make the sale, but you also want to pre-qualify and push people away if they're not right. So how do you strike that balance?
Yes and no, that they in some way go against each other. Yes, if you don't quite know how you're doing it, but people want what they can't have. They chase what moves away from them. So it's also incredibly attractive when one of my clients that's actually in my internship, my business partner did an interview with her just about her kind of experience in the first month in our free group. And she mentioned, she was like, it was very strange. It was like, he didn't seem to care whether I wanted to do it or not. And she's like, that to her, and it's interesting for me to hear this, that for her was like, that's strange. She said it must be that he's so confident in what he does. So it's not that you don't care, but you don't care about the outcome. So in a way, when you learn to sell in the right way, that pushing people away makes them want to do it even more. So, but your job, like I've done a lot of sales calls, and obviously I teach this a lot and I've listened to a lot of sales calls. So it's about energy and it's about listening. You listen to when is that person coming towards you? It's like Daniel Priestley from KPI talks about energy in sales conversations. So you have to frame the conversation. I generally do do what we call a triage call. So I don't take them straight to a sales call. I put them into a 10-minute call to basically judge whether this person is someone that's going to be a fit, etc. The flip almost starts at that point. So I'll ask questions I have kind of two or three checkpoint questions in the main sales training. And it's like, do you think you need help? It's like, I need them to say yes before we move on. If they go, yeah, I don't need to challenge at that point, but yeah is different to yes. So in my mind, I'm like, okay, this person said yeah. What is that saying? And sometimes they're like, yeah. And then they'll say another sentence afterwards. It's almost like they're unselling themselves at this point. So I'm like, okay, the energy at the moment here is that they're moving away from me. I can't now start challenging them. So I need to figure out what does that mean? That answer should be yes. Cool. And then I was like, why do you think you need help? They've got to say why. If they can't say why is such a strong question on sales calls. If they can't say why, then they don't believe it and it's not the truth. So then there's a structure to this, and the way I teach it and the way I do it is sometimes different. Dude, listen, you know I'm not cheap. You could go and probably buy this for a quarter of the price somewhere else. Do you want my help? It's like, what are they going to say? They can say no. Awesome. They don't ever. They might unsell themselves a bit well, it depends on blah, blah, blah. Or they might reveal something that's subconsciously going on in their mind, which is like a yeah. I'm like, I'm not leaving them there. No chance. I'm like, dude, come on. Yes. Yeah. No. Yes. Okay, cool. Are you sure? Yes. Why? They need to tell me why. Otherwise, I don't believe them. And it's not I don't believe them. They need to tell me why. And what fit pros would be scared of doing at this point is, what happens if I ask someone, do you want my help? And they say no. Well, good fucking job. At least you've got to the point where they've said no and you're not wasting your time. Or again, at this point, it's more like, okay, they're not moving towards me at this point. Why is that? What's really going on? So you can loop around. And often that's just they're scared to commit to doing it. Things like, I call it coaching yeses. You want to get people at the beginning of calls to say yes and commit to things. So even like, do you think something needs to change here? And if they say yeah, I'll be like, yes, yeah, no. And they'll go, oh, yes. And so then the next question of the kind of checkpoint questions that I might ask, I'm like, do you need some help with this? Yeah. Dude. I mean, yes. So Now, for the rest of the conversation, they will either commit one way or the other, and they will start saying yes. Yes is an important thing. So when I then come to the point where I'm like, do you want my help? They'll say yes. Okay, cool. So a lot of it is about, one thing that I would do, this is probably the best tip that I could possibly say, is record your sales calls and listen back to them, because you'll feel and you'll feel the things that there's an energy. A lot of it is about just tonality, small words that appear, the nuances of getting someone to come on that journey with you. So later on down the line, when you push people away, like, they're moving towards you. So I would also say, like, in answer to what you said as well, you also need to be congruent with what you're saying. So I had a conversation with someone once. I was like, what type of client would you be? And he's like, well, what do you mean? I was like, what type of client would you be? Why should I work with you? And then he's like, oh, I don't know. And I was like, are you... He didn't kind of know how to answer the question, but the frame was there. I was like, are you committed? He's like, yeah. Like, are you accountable? He's like, yeah. And I said, do you take action? And he said yes, but he didn't mean it. He didn't know that he didn't mean it, but it was like this kind of slippage. And to be honest, at that point, I just didn't think he was going to be right. So I didn't say it straight away, but 5 minutes later, I was like, look, dude, I don't think this is right for you. So I think when you actually are willing to turn people away, it changes things, because then when you know that this person is a right fit, you can bring so much strength to that situation. It's like, sometimes I do it slightly different. I'm like, dude, you need to do this. You know that, right? So I think that the ability to marry those two together is not impossible. Like, but it's hard to learn to do this, because it takes a lot of practice.
I want to make this super actionable then for anyone listening that who might not be at this kind of level, right? You've been doing this for a long time. I've been in sales for a long time, and it comes with practice and learning and testing and trial and error and recording calls and listening back and reflecting. But to make it actionable for anyone listening, what would you say are some of the key areas or key steps that people should really focus on when it comes to just improving their sales game a couple of levels? How do they step to level one and then level two to really just have an impact on their conversions and the amount of people they sign up?
Nice. Okay. Number one is go and get some sales training, pay someone to learn, because the first coach I ever worked with, and I was selling at decent money, I was like, yeah, I'm good at sales. And he just said to me, he goes, is someone who works at McDonald's good at sales? And I was like, what do you mean? And he's like, you know, I call them order takers. It's like, you walk up to the counter, you're like, I want a Big Mac and cheese, and you go and get that. And I was like, no. And he goes, that's what most fit pros are. You're good at taking orders that someone who's already decided that they want to do it, and you're the right person almost. And you basically just need to not fuck it up. And you might make at gym prices, you might even convert at 80%. When you step up, because of all the reasons I've talked about, it's a different game. So you do need to understand how to listen and overcome their own internal fears, as well as whether your program works or not. So I think that most fit pros should learn sales and pay for it. If you're going to pay for one thing in this industry that gets you a return on investment, it's sales training, because you can massively, everyone wants leads, everyone wants the funnels and all that. Your conversions could improve so much if you just accepted that I could be better at this. So that's the first thing. Second is like, record your calls. Now that obviously means that people need to be getting on sales calls. And most fit pros don't. They don't even have sales calls, because they don't even really understand direct response marketing. The big thing that I would say when you want to get good at sales or coaching as well is that questions are the answers. If you listen back to your sales calls, or in some way, even if you're doing sales conversations, how much of the time are you speaking and how much of the time are they speaking? It should be, my calls, to be honest, now are probably 95% of the time they're speaking, 5% of the time I speak. Probably when I started doing it, it's probably 80-20. 80% of the time they're speaking, 20% of the time I'm speaking. Telling is selling. Telling people only works to a certain level. It's about knowing the right questions to ask and listening and learning to listen. Most people can't listen. And it sounds a strange thing to say, but if you listen back to your sales calls, like how much time are you using your ears and how much time are you using your gob? So they're probably the three things that I would say. One more as well, which is more like I split it into inner and outer game, is that a lot of that is like the outer game structure, but it's just to understand your internal world and what's going on when you're on sales calls. Like I said at the beginning, just admit that I'm scared to get on the phone. The first time I ever sold high ticket on the phone, and I'd already sold in person, remember, like, I had a call lined up on Skype. My hands were sweating. My throat was dry. I was nervous. I was walking around. My missus was like, what the fuck's going on? And just to say, you know what? I'm actually just fearful of this is a great place to be, as opposed to it doesn't work. I can't do it. Like, it doesn't work in my area. Just admit what's going on, which is I'm scared of selling. And that's a really good place to be.
Awesome, man. That was really great advice. I just want to say thank you so much for doing this. There's been some crazy stories in here and a ton of great insight into sales. Now, for anyone that really wants to learn more about you and what you do and how you can maybe help people take their businesses from offline to online, how does that all work and how can they find out more about you and what you do?
Yeah, so I've got loads of free stuff that I do. So I've got a book, well, that's not free, but it's, you know, a few dollars, The Prosperous Personal Trainer. So they can have a read of that. I have a free group as well, the Institute of Fitness Behavior Change on Facebook. So you can come in there and learn. The kind of overarching thing in that is it's about persuasion. So sales and coaching, kind of two sides of the same coin. I have a free challenge, well, mini course that we do every couple of weeks, which is more about like actually teaching personal trainers how to have coaching sessions outside of the gym. So a lot of personal trainers like want to move online or they like hybrids. So it just gives you the documents, exactly what to say, the structure of some little cool things that you can do with current clients, more just a practice coaching. Because then if you're confident of like you would actually know what you do, not in the gym, then the sales becomes much easier, obviously. So that's more about like helping people just see what coaching is and behavior change and how they can go and just start doing it. I have a program called the internship, which is basically 6 months. It's working with me directly where we help people understand coaching. So it's education based as well. And we help them get their first few clients and then they get to run their clients through the 12-week program while kind of I'm there with them. Kind of holding the hand, and if there's problem, like you said, if there's problem where the client disappears, obviously we teach them how to sell it, but it's like, well, then what? So we work with them while they're working with those first sort of 1 to 3 clients, and then we build them their flagship program, which is more about like very specific building a niche, building the marketing, and all that kind of stuff. So that's the internship. That's the only program that I do at the moment. So they're the best places.
Love it, man. And then on Facebook, it's Tim Drummond. People can hit you up on there as well.
Yeah. Add me on Facebook, timdrummond.com.
Awesome. So let's end on this. This is what I generally ask every guest that comes on the podcast. What do you think makes a good coach?
Listening. Learn to listen. In fact, it doesn't only make a good coach. It makes you incredibly charismatic, incredibly understanding in all parts of your life, relationships with friends and family and partners and just general people. Most people don't even understand that it's a thing that they don't do. You will get way more of what you want in life if you simply just learn to actually listen to what people are really saying to you. Like, even if I just brought that back to a level of you'll make a shitload more money and you will help your clients so much more by really understanding the power of silence and listening.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you did enjoy the show, I would be really grateful if you could leave a short review or post a comment on what you'd like to hear in future episodes. And if you're a face-to-face personal trainer with room to take on additional clients, head over to coachingignited.com where you can apply for our 30-day Client Accelerator program and find out more about our business, sales, and marketing training platform. See you on the next episode.